title was, or the, at least the one that wound up on the board, was Heartland Cafe, Urban Version, Right Livelihood, which is really a lot to say. I wanted to say attempted Urban Version, Right Livelihood. It's a lot to make a claim that you got there already or something, which I don't at all. But really, out of respect for Chief Seattle Day, to not start it out by observing what just traipsed by us in a couple of big trucks would be remiss, because really everything I have to say and that I've experienced in doing a restaurant, doing a form, if you will, in the urban setting is just capsulized in that. What we did up there up top was take all this garbage out of a big old structure from the camp, the mine rather, previous, and sort it and put it in some kind of movable fashion. And I don't know how many trucks went by.
Two.
Well, there are a lot more truckloads up there. And it made me feel really good in a lot of ways, because I don't have near that much junk to clean up at the Heartland. So it sort of gives me, says, hey, if this is what you could do with 30 people with this amount of stuff, how much would it take for us to clear up? In any case, it felt very appropriate to be moving the tin, the bottles, the old radiators, the old water heaters. There's a whole slew of refrigerators up there. An amazing amount of stuff, salad oil tins. And to realize these, as you move each thing, we put it here, and what we're doing is trying to put it back in some appropriate way, since there's no way to throw it to. And to throw something away is a no longer operative term. So we do honor to that thought and that kind of mindset here today, and hopefully for the rest of our lives. So I really want to fold whatever little thing I can share with you in this 40 minutes that are left totally in that vein, and put it in the light of that thought, and to put all of our lives and our actions down the road vis-a-vis the earth into a more appropriate and blessing place for the earth. Since we're small, I wonder if you'd mind if I went started by introducing ourselves to one another, if you don't mind. Great. I'm Katie Hogan, and I came here from Chicago, and we'll see what for, as a teaching staff to do this.
I'm Laurel Lemke. I came from St. Vincent this week from Tacoma. I'm a recreation leader at Western State Hospital in Tacoma with psychiatric patients, and I've been busy trying to learn crafts I can bring back.
Great. Thanks.
I'm Bob Olson. I'm from the Twin Cities of Minnesota, and I came for the singles emphasis, but also for a lot of the other things too. It's been very, very enlightening and very, very good week so far.
Welcome. Thank you.
I'm John Fish from Chicago, and I hung out from time to time, not often enough at the Heartland, so. But here to get some rest.
I'm Valley Long from Walla Walla, retired farmer. I've been at Thompson Holden Village 63-71, and the church, in a non-traditional church camp. And 73 is the last one, and we haven't been back since until this time.
Great return. Good day to do it on.
I'm Phyllis Bauer from Midlands, Washington. I'm a writer, and I've been coming here since it opened, and this is my first time. And I'm here for singles emphasis also. I have really become inspired. In fact, today I said to somebody, "What am I going to do when I go back to the earth? What do you think I'm going to bring with me?" I feel that far out. I really feel on the mountaintops. So I'm interested in this particular issue.
Perfect.
practice it when they can.
All right. I'm Lois Prythinger, and I'm here from California. And I'm really enjoying the rain.
Great.
Yeah. And I'm here to soak up whatever. So far, it's been good.
I'm David Prythinger. We're together. Here also, we're together on the teaching staff, actually, and we're doing sessions on Namibia.
Oh,
hello.
I'm Gloria Baker, and I'm from California, and I'm not enjoying it.
I'm not either.
originally from Seattle, so I'm used to the rain.
I'm Susan Rantz. I'm the teaching staff, and but I also feel a little bit of connection to this particular session because I spent 8.5 years, and actually more than that, working for, and having a big part of my life be the Heartland Cafe. So.
She could probably do it. let me just start and tell a story, and I'm going to keep it real brief, so I'm going to borrow a watch, something I didn't bring, which was pointed out the very first thing when I was late for the very first thing. Okay, it's 4:15. So I'm going to give myself 15 minutes to tell you what the Heartland is. Is that too long?
No.
All right. Because it'll raise all kinds of other things that we can share about. And by the way, all you single types, I know where you're coming from. I've been single all my life, thus far. That could change. But I'm 38, so it is going a long way. It is, you know, closing a lot of other doors to open other ones. So I was supposed to do a singles forum last night, so we can... We're in the same groove here, just on another topic. I started the restaurant with a partner, actually with two partners, 12 years ago in 1976. Yes, that would make me young. I was 26 also in 1976. And so I didn't know what I was doing. This was a major feature to starting the restaurant for both my two partners and myself. We were inspired, if you will, to do something like that out of the desire to have a good wholesome food diet available on the street to Chicagoans. Being single people, we eat out a lot, and we don't eat out in the high dollar, high ticket item restaurants. We go to Greasy Spoons, at least that was our experience up until then, and you go to Greasy Spoons that are located right by the L or the bus stop. So we found a spot, and it was right by the L, and it was a pit, a previous Greasy Spoon, and it had to be totally gutted. And what we did was just make a diet available that understood how much it takes of grain to feed a cow. So we didn't have any red meat, and we still don't have any red meat. And we didn't serve white sugar, although we had honey on the table. And we baked all of our own bread, and we didn't have a microwave, and we still don't have a microwave, which is amazing. I wish we did have a microwave, but more on that later. What I'm trying to define, in sort of the same way it came out, because it wasn't, all laid out and paid for ahead of time. We did not have any capital to start the business with. Well, what we did have was $4,000 that the three of us put together, literally, to go into this space that was boarded up on one side and painted black on the other, a storefront on an empty corner, and start tearing it apart and develop and build this place. My description might be bad. I think the only thing that's important to get across was that it was sort of like magic, given that we didn't know what we were doing and we didn't have money, that it took over this storefront in April and August, we opened up a restaurant that by the time that 4 months of developing it had started, had already made contact with a whole slew of neighborhood folks, simply by them walking by on the front and saying, "What are you doing anyway?" And having us, Tom Sawyer, like, say, "Hey, want to scrape a window?" And it's fun. And plus, both my partner and I came from political organizing backgrounds. I shouldn't say backgrounds, front grounds. It was what we did. I was a student until I was 22, and I was studenting during 1968 and 1970 and all those years where if you were a student, you had the luxury of attending a lot of demonstrations, causing them, calling them, writing about them, etc. It was part of what our life was. And he was 8 years my senior and nowhere near me, but doing other political work where he was until we met in 1975, which coincided with the final and last gasps of movement-type activity in the city in any great large scale, because people suddenly had to start making a living, raising their kids, etc. So the notion developed for, we have to develop a sense of economy, or at least we have to develop an economy that supports people while they do their other good work, whether it be teaching, parenting, raising the children, I said that, parenting, dancing, acting, writing, etc. So I've covered that we didn't know anything, that we didn't have any money, and that we had high ideals. Let me do more on the high ideals. We figured, too, that if we offered a good diet, we could not do it in the sense of granola hut, natural foods, because anything that had appeared in Chicago thus far with that label on it was a very boring place to go indeed, and full of very strange, unfriendly people with sucked in cheeks, and it just didn't look that healthy, you know. So what I'm saying is we did not want to be, you know, a natural food place, and we've never called ourselves that, even though other people go, you know, the Heartland, the natural food place. We never do that. It's good, wholesome food for the mind and body. So we wanted to create an atmosphere that was not only fun to be in for the client, but fun to work in for the employee. And I'll just say two sentences about having employees, and we can pick that apart later. Just know this much. One, my partner was a communist when I met him first, at least in ideology, and I was some kind of Catholic fool, socialist, Democrat. You know, I don't know what, but I hated isms anyway, so I didn't claim any of that stuff. So suddenly we were bosses to one degree or another. That didn't work at all, but our employees taught us that, you know, sooner or later they said, "You have to fire people if they don't show up to work." You know, it was that sort of thing that our employees had to teach us about and point out. And so literally the place always had a feel out of our own weakness as much as anything else that it needed help. And you could help. Almost anybody had something to offer. And that is to this day, the magic, one of the magic pieces of it is because people walk in there and if they're so inclined and looking for something at this time in their life, it speaks to them and it says, "You will be okay as you here, as long as you are doing what you can do." And ask any one of them who are back there slaving away, they'll say, "Yep, that's true. Bless it." This place is really going to keep me from swearing. I can't believe it. It's really working thus far. All right, so how are we doing on time? I'm supposed to be finished.
People hate to quit work at the Heartland because their place will fall apart if they leave.
Well, our customers feel that way too. All right, so let's see. Let me just try and wrap up. All right, there were three reasons that we opened, and stated reasons, and we even printed something up within a year of opening that said that. And a couple of them I went through, the menu, to make that kind of a wholesome menu available to the city's myriad of residents.
to offer a good, more positive than usually found in restaurant business work experience for the people who worked there, and three, to create a community center, a place where we could share ideas about those political, social, and other community issues that we would always be involved in as well and felt were important to share information about. You will notice that none of those goals was to make money. Therefore, we did not. We did do the above three items right away, better than they were being done anywhere else because they were uniquely stated goals of ours. And when no one else is doing it, you can look good doing it, trying, you know, because there's nobody to compare it to. But we did not make money. We got into terrible trouble with the IRS fairly quickly. And I'm here to say that this is the first June I've had in about 7 years that our corporation wasn't on the bad list of the IRS currently. So I am rejoicing. Thank you, Chief Seattle. I know. It's actually very heavy because I know that we brought about that trouble and that crisis in order to prove that we were willing to be successful in some way. If you caught some New Age jargon in there, you were right, and it'll come back. And I try and weave a lot of that stuff together because one of the things that the Heartland is a crossroads. Because my partner might come from a more potently political thing than I do, I come from a pretty potent Catholic and Chicago thing, and we both have to deal with those New Age people who keep becoming our customers and supporting us and teaching us. So it's a crossroads, and it's a place where uniquely, just like this place actually, you can see a lot of different kind of people finding a meeting place despite their differences. The value, in fact, that keeps singing out of Holden is that essential thing, plus all of the wonderful things that happen when you do that. And it's brave to take on the diversity of the population, but it's doable, you know. The land has done it always. We just have gotten in the way. And so I'm sorry to meander there, but okay. I've told you mostly about the Heartland. It still exists, and it exists in better shape than normal, at least from the all the measurement points of view. We're out of Chapter 11. One thing I didn't mention is that we do write a newspaper as well, that I didn't bring that many of, but I could pass some of them around, actually. I do have up your knitting there. And you just should leave room because there aren't enough for everybody to have one, and I would like to leave them with Holden when I leave. But if something catches your eye and you want to check it out, just tell me and you can hold on to it for a day or two. Anyway, in there, we've done the paper for about 10 years now. Yeah, 10 years. Quarterly, and now it's every 2 months. And it's a quite a mixed bag of health and sports and social change and community up to global issues. And part of starting something as amateurs and continuing to do it as amateurs means that you never have to pay attention to other people's borders and cross into things just willy-nilly. And I think that's what we do. To some extent, but that's because you could sit down at any American kitchen dinner table and have them talk about everything from here out to the ends of the earth and what it means for them to eat certain foods or run however many miles per week or not, and somebody's got to speak to them and, you know, engage that dialogue further in some sort of holistic way that says what we do is does matter, what we do is attached to one another, has an effect. Recycling is just one of the most perfect pieces of that.
and representations of it, I should say, not pieces. So, I forgot if I was supposed to follow this. Questions. So the economy notion, community, support and education. Support and education really comes through that newspaper a lot. Think global. I have different thoughts about that, but I think that's something we should talk. Think global and act local is something I can say I've done, but I don't think it's enough to stop with act global. Then you have to act local, then you have to go back to global, back to local. It does not end to just bring it home and do something there, because sooner or later you forget what's beyond local. And I think I'm local, so I'm stopping. How about if we just see if anything came up for people that you wanted to ask about what I said so far?
Well, when you don't call it natural foods, but what are these wholesome foods?
Ah, good, a little menu breakdown, right? soup, salad, fresh from starter soup from our own. All the breads and desserts are homemade in the place. We don't even have a mixer, which is disgusting, but on the other hand, I think it makes the bread really good. And brown rice, beans and rice is a staple. Stir-fried vegetables and rice. Vegetarian specials every night. We also serve really good fish and chicken. But it's really, really good fish and chicken, and turkey too. And we have breakfasts that are like normal breakfast: eggs and omelets and granola and fruit and yogurt and whole wheat cakes and blueberry pancakes and French toast. And am I making you hungry yet? What, Valley?
Where's the oatmeal?
Oatmeal. We have the best oatmeal. Steel cut oats. We have really good oatmeal. I mean, we have the best oatmeal in Chicago. That I'm sure. And lunch is all the normal stuff, you know, salads and sandwiches and quiche, and there's usually a fish special. And then dinner menu comes on at 5 and goes till 11. And right now, nowadays, it's really a hopping scene because there's this big outdoor cafe in front that we built. Part of what Holden reminds me of in this sense about the Heartland is the ongoing process nature of it, where you're building things all the time and adding on and changing and redesigning and tearing down to build again. And that's a lot what we've been doing, and I'm really looking forward to retrofitting a brand new sewer thing out of there finally. But we actually took out cement when we came there, which is, you may not, unless you live in a city, really grok the significance of, but to come into a corner that was a cement pad for 20 feet in front of the store, which was ours before the sidewalk even started, and we said, of course, we're going to eat outside, but there's all this cement, and there wasn't even grass in the parkway between the sidewalk and the street. So what I'm just telling you is that we took a sledgehammer and broke up the cement and put a garden and then another garden and then a third garden in. And even neighbors of ours who didn't like the food and weren't really interested in coming to a restaurant a half a block from their house were always glad that we put the flowers and the trees in and would say that. And it's just an interesting thing that, you know, even if I didn't have or we didn't have the sensibility or aesthetic need for green life there, somebody down the block, you know, was just waiting for us to do it in order to affirm it. And so there's really endless things you can do if you have creative, you know, blank canvas to do it with. The city often has permits and things that are required to do stuff like this. Our way was to really not to ask for trouble unnecessarily. So, you know, we would just innocently start building things away, you know, if they weren't too complex and if the city or the police came up and said, well, where's your permit for that? And we'd show them our picture and say, come on in, sit down, have some cider. What do you think? You think this is doable or what? Well, where's your permit? You know, who's getting the permit? We only once had our construction shut down for lack of, you know, proper IDs, etc. Part of that too is that we picked a kind of remote spot from business development. So that's the menu. Plus, we have a bar now. Haha, not too wholesome. Right. Yes, indeed. Not very wholesome at all. But when we got in trouble with the IRS and saw how many people, because we let them, would bring in six packs and bottles of wine and we'd just serve them their glasses or whatever, and the reality was something had to give. And to get, oh, the other thing was that the city helped us get a liquor license one summer in order to do Chicago Fest, and when we went back to the restaurant, we said, how can we not do this at the restaurant too? So we just did, sort of backed into that. But it is a pretty important piece of it now. But it's a bar that has everything from fresh squeezed carrot juice to shots of Cuervo. It's well-rounded, like the neighborhood, and sometimes it's a sports bar. You know, everybody comes in there to watch the Bears in the playoffs or whatever. It adds a facet. It adds a hook, actually, for some people who would never come in there for the food.
I want to ask you a question. You've always been hiring from the very beginning refugees, undocumented, people who really need help.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Now with the new law, what happens when the INS, Immigration Naturalization Service, I think is quite aware that you're an employer of undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
Are you beginning now to ask
The Hispanic workers in some at the Heartland come from mostly El Salvador, with a few from Mexico. They are some of the most stable of the workforce, as in least turnover over years. John is aware that one of our first young guys from El Salvador came from the first sanctuary family in Chicago. And no, we never asked people if they had green cards. We'd just ask them for a social security number and then pay them in a paycheck that got taxes taken out that they never got back, but they paid them. The reason that's notable is that most restaurants hire undocumented workers, pay them cash, never report their wages, therefore not paying tax themselves on their wages, much less giving them the opportunity to file taxes and get them back, which we showed a bunch of people who could how to do for the first time, men who had been in the United States for 10 years working and never, you know, getting to file taxes. So really it was putting both them and ourselves at risk all these years to be outright about that. Now most everyone who's there now fit in the amnesty thing. So we cranked out a lot of letters, you know, saying he has worked here for this long, it's traceable by their check stubs, they've been paying into Social Security from the Heartland for new people, it would be different. New people, there would be a new question I'd ask. And that is, show me what you got. Did you get one? You know? But if you know, you came to me with somebody, and you know this is true, if you came to me with someone illegal, someone who had nothing, and said he really needs to work, and I didn't have to shove somebody else out of the way, you know I'd have a job there. We'd just figure out a different way to do it.
Can you have a social security number without a green card?
Not a real one.
Okay.
You just put together a pile of numbers and you got a social security number.
There's a way to, I don't know, and it's real debatable, but how do we all do this in our lives? How do we skip in and out of the sort of the nuances of craziness that our society lays on us, it, while also creating something right within that society. I mean, I'm not out, like when I said the other day, it's above ground. I'm not outside of the system. I'm very much in it, you know, and I'm paying all these taxes. Paying a whole lot of taxes, you know, on that payroll and on paying all this insurance, a thing that I don't believe in. I don't believe in this crazy system of insurance that says, shit is gonna happen. Get ready, real bad shit is gonna happen. So pour out money for years in preparation for bad stuff to happen. I hate it. But we've been doing it for years. I mean, you can't do a business that employs 50 people most of the year and not do that sort of thing. But I have talked to people in all of the alternative health practitioner areas, you know, who are in town, and said, why can't we put together? Why don't a dozen of you practitioners that we all use get together and be a fund that we can put money into so that I could send the cook over there and we don't have to pay because it's covered. That's our insurance. Why don't we create our own? Well, that hasn't gone that far yet. There's a lot of problems because, you know, half of these people are having problems just being duly registered in the state's eyes to practice whatever they practice. So we're really in between forms. And I feel the heartland is like a, you know, a major dollop in between forms out there. This Holden can exist up here, thank God, as a place for people to find and rest with. But if you're down there on the corner of the street in Chicago, and you've got very much of the same kind of energies running, it seems to me. There's just a higher level of tolerance that you have to have about bumping into your fellow man and woman and the rules he and she have put together, crazy or not, about how we do together. And sooner or later, I hope that having done this form for this long will have an effect on changing those things. The Heartland has had an effect on some. We had Harold Washington, who later became mayor, in the Heartland Cafe two nights before his primary victory in 1983, which was a great moment for me personally to have host him there, because he hadn't had a lot of good settings on the north side. I live on the north side of Chicago. If you know Chicago, it's south, west, and north. East is like Michigan. And north side is widely believed to be white, but it's pretty integrated at this point, and certainly where we live, it's a pretty great, wonderful mixture of people. Whereas the south and west sides have major basic chunks of black, totally black neighborhoods. I come originally from the southwest side, which was majorly white and still is. But anyway, this isn't on Chicago. I'm going to do Chicago in a couple days. Harold Washington came to the Heartland and had a kind of reception there that only the Heartland could produce, because it involved even chimneys of soot breaking away from the wood-burning stove and dumping soot on one of the reporters. In that way, it was only the kind of welcome we could give him, but also because it was black, white, and brown, and it was young, and it was not already political. It was not already the converted altogether. It was neighborhood people who found out this guy was visiting and wanted to check him out. But it was people with good hearts enough that they were already that open in Chicago in 1983. So the Heartland provides a space for certain things to happen that couldn't happen if it wasn't there. And that's on a very personal level, all the way up to that. Sorry.
Harold Washington ended up really loving the Heartland Cafe.
Yeah.
He ended up hiring Katie to run his campaign on the north side.
Yeah, but he didn't make the connection between that and the Heartland then. I mean,
not that night, but over time.
No.
I mean, it was
over
a really important place, which was unusual because it's not shiny and glitzy the way you think that a
aspired a politician who was about to be elected mayor of Chicago would want to go to places.
Oh no. Even Holden is really a glitzy compared to the Heartland. I mean, really, it's very nicely, it's rough hewn, but not that rough at all up here. Well, and those tables, you know, are all, they match.
They match.
The chairs match. When we started, we just went to Maxwell Street. We got a lot of different kind of tables and chairs. Chairs that didn't have what belonged here got macrame'd here. I mean, it was really, really, and it's still not that far removed from it. I mean, when we look around and go, we need about 40 chairs. And Michael says, I'll go find them. I said, what are you going to pay for them? I go, I don't know. What's the top I can pay? You can't pay more than $12 a piece. You can't get chairs for less than $20, $25 a piece. I mean, a lot of ways, poverty mentality has both saved us and allowed us to continue and exist. And at the other hand, in the same moment, holds us back, you know, keeps me provincial and dense. I mean, we have a beautiful management team now that involves people who know a lot more than me and my partner, which is why the place still exists, because we've begun to share the responsibility.
Can I interject something? Just to jump back for a minute to that night when then Congressman Harold Washington was at the Heartland, which was, I was one of the people Katie described. Now, I worked there, but I had been struggling all the way through.
She was going to vote for Jane Byrne.
I had been struggling all the way through as to who I wanted to support for mayor in 83. And we had long political discussions at the Heartland all the time about it. So I came that night to the cafe, and the place was filled with people. People were standing on the food preparation services in the kitchen, and people were just hanging, and there were hundreds of people in one room waiting for him to come in. And he came in, and he looked up, he stood on the stage, and Katie introduced him, and he stood on the stage, and he looked out at the room full of people, as Katie said, very rainbow of people, and said, waited for the applause to die down, and looked out and said, tonight, I want to call this the Unity Cafe. And I looked at this man, and I realized that he understood why I worked at this place, mm-hmm. and that it was the most intimate understanding that anyone in sort of that kind of distant political realm had ever had of why I'd worked at this place and made not a lot of money, but worked very hard because I believed what it stood for, and I mean, it was like a conversion experience. I just felt my heart open up to Harold Washington, and from that moment on, I was like, I'm working for this guy who knows why we do this work. So that it was a really, and I just want to say that about the Heartland being a place where political and life issues were given room to grow and to happen, and where we really worked on, you know, we would have election headquarters on election night returns taken at the Heartland. Yeah. And all that kind of stuff, and it became a real vital, throbbing place in the community of concern. I mean, it wasn't just a joint that you rented out to have a good time in. That when people looked, at least along the North Lakefront, thought about a place, that the place fit the idea, the kind of thing they wanted to express, they went to the Heartland. You know what I mean?
Well, there's a couple other things that maybe I'll raise, and just throw anything out, or if you see something in the newspaper that you want to question or raise. I don't know how many of you are teachers or whatever, but you all come in contact with younger people, and the thing that I want to share about the Heartland a lot of times is that there is room. If there's one thing capitalism is really good for, is that you can take a form, and if you manifest it and are willing to do the back-breaking work that it requires, you are able to do that. And so when I was teaching on the program that Ingrid and Susan both teach on still, and John in Chicago, I would always want to just share the sense with my students of getting in touch with their ableness to take something into their own hands and do it, and to not be really stopped or held back too much by paying attention to somebody else's notion of what's acceptable, how glitzy, how much training they've had or experienced, that if in fact they're just following their heart and wanting to manifest something more than it currently is. I'm talking specifically about new forms and alternatives to what now exists, whether it's alternatives to schooling or physical workout space and notions. Businesses, restaurants are very easy prey for this sort of thing. How is it that if it's a desirable thing to let this 1,000 restaurants flourish or bloom, if it's a desirable thing to have more broken down and community oriented, rooted establishments, how do we encourage it? Maybe I shouldn't ask that question yet, though. I just realized as I asked it, because maybe you don't want to see that. Sorry. What else? Anything? Anybody? Wanna?
Did you talk about the store and the source of stuff in the store and kind of the stuff you sell?
No, actually, I forgot. We also have a general store, which I call the, you know, it's like the Howard Johnsons of health food joints. It's just attached to the restaurant, and its excuse for existence is the restaurant. It's got a great magazine rack, a real good selection of books for as few books as we have, sweatshirts, t-shirts, and goods from Guatemala like this, and El Salvador, and Nicaragua, all kinds of things, jewelry or weaving, and then a smattering, a sort of basics, whole foods offerings from vitamins to tamari and oil and seaweed and a few bagged herb teas and things that we make ourselves and sell, breads, etc.
It enhances the think global and act local.
Oh yeah.
Because of
it acts as support to, you know, what the whole idea of the restaurant itself. It says to folks, which happens a lot there, folks will bring in their parents or their kids. You know, it doesn't matter. It, on one end or the other, there will be a Heartland customer in the family, whether they're the first or second generation, and at Christmas time or break or something, all of a sudden they come with another being in tow, and you know that they're family. And this family person, they're like giving you looks like, please, please, make it all right. And that family person is going, what's the matter with hot dogs? What's the matter with hamburgers? You know, and they're having a real hard time even being in there. So, oh yeah, right, oh yeah. Oh, I don't mean to, I'm sorry. Can I smoke here? And they're shocked when I say, yes, you can. This is the smoking room. And, so the thing that happens there is people relax. 9 times out of 10, people come in there with what is she dragging me to now? And they just chill out. They, you know, drop whatever are the things that they're holding on to so bad to judge us by, realize that we've already been judged 6 ways for Sunday on that same issue. Will in fact go, nice outfit that waitress is wearing, really great. And they'll just relax, and they come out past to the register, and their kid will say, or the mother will say, look, here's that stuff, take it with you, tofu, you know. No, we don't sell tofu because we don't have a refrigeration case. We would, but we do sell Ben and Jerry's ice cream in the store, and they'll snatch that. A little bit of the Heartland granola is bagged. And also, more importantly, is that we act as reference. People call us with the strangest questions, or will come up to us and say, this is a strange question, and I just love ones that begin like that. Go, try me, I've heard them all, you know, just try me. Which, and we can go to the mini library and the magazine section and start to help point in that direction for folks. I think that the other aspect, I would just come up with, finally, to throw out to you guys, because it might make, that doing the restaurant and dealing with the public, opening up a public joint like that, for me has been a ministry. And it wasn't just Holden that dragged that out of me. I said that before. I've said it to my mother when my mother and I talk about the differences between her religious practice and mine. And I tell her, mine is really not that different, Mom. I'm doing ministry every day a week just like you. But I'm doing it in a little more secular kind of way. You know, it's totally infused with taking down barriers rather than setting them up. Not that my mother's way has been set up barriers, but you have to go through, you have to jump through a few loops to get to my mother, to get to her ministry. You have to be Catholic. You have to be going to a Catholic school. You have to be going, attending a Catholic liturgy. And I was raised in that, and I am grateful because it gave me the kind of faith that I was required to do everything I've done since. And I know that other people's gods and version of God is the same as mine. And the important thing is that we understand we're people of God and people of the earth, not whose, and move forward from there. So it's not different than a bartender saying that he's a priest, you know. It's pretty much the same thing. That little thing that I've described is a ministry, and it's a potential ministry for anybody who's looking to change what they do now.
Is there a love ethic in this thing that draws those people to Heartland? There must be something that pulls them together.
I should think so.
I think yes. Did. I mean, I can answer that from being someone who wasn't one of the people who actually started it, but that was pulled in. There are
people have given so much to that place themselves.
Volunteerism, isn't it?
No. I mean, there are some people who have just worked out of, you know, just want put in a day here and there, but everybody gets paid. But they don't get paid much. I mean, they could all go somewhere else and make more doing something similar, but it'd be very different, and they know it. And so they're giving in recognition of something that also gives back.
And I mean, you used the term earlier in your title, right? Livelihood, that's a loaded term sometimes, but I think that gets the closest to the kinds of reasons that people are drawn to the Heartland and have stayed at the Heartland or feel the Heartland is theirs, is that the opportunity to make your work life harmonious with how you feel and what you care about, and yet still have it be a functioning work life. I mean, you know, not be on a trust fund and then, you know, be able to, you know, coordinate these two things, but you know, to have to go in and do some hard work and crab about your boss and all that kind of stuff too, but still feel like when you walked away from there tired at the end of the day that you'd done something that was it didn't make any dents in the planet, you know. It sort of all the way around felt okay, and you could go home and feel like you could go to sleep and sleep well and be proud of yourself. And that, I think, it's a very simple way to describe it, but it really was the dynamic that made so many very disparate types of folks that worked there come together, become a community, and work. and, you know.
But I think your point about love is good, because a couple weeks ago, my husband and I were the sponsors to two children who were around age 10 who were baptized. And it was their divorced and very hostile parents, both sets of grandparents, one of whom was quite wealthy and used to fancy things, and the other was working class, sort of blue collar. And we had to choose a place to go after the baptism. And we all had to come together for the baptism in our Lutheran church. And it was a little touchy afterwards, because we were going to have to socialize together and try to make nice for these children who'd been baptized, and it was their day. And the only place that had enough love in it to make everybody comfortable was the Heartland Cafe. So that's where we went for our baptismal dinner.
Well, you're also, you're right on the money with that. And it's, to me, the gift of it. Even as the founder, I never could have even felt like I wouldn't have pictured getting so much. I feel very blessed for just having done my work for the last while.
Are you able to love every person that comes in there? Drug addict, alcoholic?
Especially them. I'm really good at throwing drunks out. We were talking about that the other day. At throwing drunks out.
She throws the drunks out.
Well, I mean, you have to. I mean, unless they'll quietly sit down and eat, unless they're at peace with not being served any more alcohol. If they're not at peace with that, then they're out of there.
But
lovingly.
But lovingly.
Oh, surely. No, I mean, there's a lot of little things to it, which, you know, what today wasn't a good exposure of, but a lot of little pieces that I think are important about just that sort of thing, that when, you know, you don't dial 911. We don't dial the police. We deal with what we got in front of us ourselves. There's enough people around, and you don't have to get physical. And it's a great lesson about that, you know. People don't want to, really. You just go up in their face and say, you don't really need to do that here. It's not going to get you anything. You know, it's the other thing is also not disconnecting. When you're in the city, a lot of people, you would do it too if you weren't used to it. You come in the city and you start saying, well, I'm not like them. That's for sure. Whoop, I'm not like them either. No, I'm very much more responsible. I look better and I'm smarter. And you just begin to see all these people that you don't want to deal with. And, well, go to the mountaintop, because as long as you're down there, you're going to be dealing with them. And believe me, you'll have to deal with them. There's nowhere to run, is sort of the way it is. I grew up on the southwest side, where the thing that was going on was white racism, hot and heavy, from all the time I was growing up. And what I saw was people running, leaving their homes of so many years, unquestioning, just buying the line of the real estate, jerks. What did we call them?
Panic
peddlers. Just buying it, no questions asked, and deciding, oh, well, they're black, I'm white, I can't deal with it, I'm giving up my home. Boom, you know. So I think that, like, affected me, because it's ridiculous. And if you connect with someone who is on a path that has pretty much continuously been showing to himself, I am separate, I am alone, I am socially deviant, and carrying that out day after day, it comes as a great surprise to someone like that, that when you look in their eyes, you know, when you don't go, somebody call the cops, but instead you go, so, what are you up to today? You know, all of a sudden it's like, of course you should connect with me, because I'm a human being, and you know, that's what's in. So I think there's a,
You can't stay in this business, I don't think, unless you really love everybody. You really can't, much less in additional enjoyment, good fun out of everybody. That's
so your clientele consists of
It's pretty varied now. It's really wonderful. It's almost like Holden. Another way. I mean, it really is. We probably don't have as many older people simply because it's still in the city and it's spooky to be in the city. And older people don't, you know, if they are in the city, they drive more rather than walk. And it's a very walking neighborhood. We don't have Russian immigrants much, which is unusual because our neighborhood doesn't. No, it's not unusual. Russian immigrants don't eat out, nor do Hispanic immigrants eat out. They work in restaurants, but they don't eat out in them. So we have the whole range of white and black and visiting European neighborhood people, including babies. We're very good with babies, which is also a part of the treat of the place. Actually, I think that God looks down and he says, whoever's good to babies gets 10 extra points this month, and we're good to babies. Most parents will tell you they go into a city restaurant and the maitre d' or the waitress or whoever rolls their eyes to the ceiling and gives them the worst spot in the house and, you know, hovers going, please don't let your baby be a baby, please don't, you know, and gets crazy, makes everybody uncomfortable. The baby, of course, immediately knows it. You know, whereas a baby comes in our place, they are showered with love. They are like, welcome to the world. They are given every amount of space they want. It is said, throw the cornbread on the floor. We could sweep up after you. That's what brooms are for, et cetera.
Did you ask a question before about how can this kind of thing happen in other places?
I did, but I didn't feel it worked. No, I didn't. Yeah.
Well.
All right.
why not invite people to get a Heartland franchise? To be more serious, I know of a place. I know of in Washington D.C. of a place where they want to start a restaurant, and I have a hunch it might be something like. You do there. Would you like to be a consultant to them?
Sure, I'd love to be a consultant. I mean, I have actually done that a few times, but not for franchise purposes and a couple of them.
I was more or less jesting on that, but but I mean, it might turn out to be like that.
Yeah. Well, I do think that there's some worth in putting the history of it together in a more, you know, manageable form, or even maybe putting together a video that would show the place itself is something I've, as an aid or as a sharing tool, particularly to younger people, because it is the ultimate younger people task to start and keep a restaurant running, which is, there is room for an older person, many older people, but a young person has to punch it into being. Which, by the way, the whole singles thing that most of the people that work there are single, mm-hmm. and have been, older or younger. And there's a woman who's been with us from the beginning who is 67 this year. Yeah, and she's, I mean, she's literally been with us from the beginning. She's my partner's ex-mother-in-law. But as she says, you never have an ex-mother-in-law. She's a mother-in-law always. And she is a marvelous person of Zen type. Quality wisdom, and
there's kids, yeah. that started to work at the Heartland when, you know, like as bus people in the days
who now drink at the bar,
yeah, who are 11 and 12, and now they're graduating from college and come back, and it's just wonderful to watch them grow up and bring their new girlfriends or their friends from Princeton or wherever they went to school. Right. And
well,
show
you know,
the Heartland. You know?
That's what community is. You know, you all know that. Yeah. You've experienced that.
It's a serious question about is it replicable and how you take a lot of the experimental things or the creative things. And in one sense, you say it's not. I would say it's not.
Right.
In the sense that it is in the struggle of giving birth to those.
Right.
That the creativity happens.
Right.
And if you set up, developed a manual, and a video.
How to make
and
a hard cassette.
And someone could put it together and say, here's how you start your greatest restaurant. You'd lose something.
Right.
But still, you want to see these things happen.
But I think it's applicable. I agree. I mean, people even say to us, start a new one down in Hyde Park.
Yeah.
It would not be the same. I mean, we'd have to go in there with money, first of all, and set it up and open it up. We wouldn't have the energy or wherewithal to go through that long process of 3 years worth or something before you really are trying to be serious about it. But I do think that there is a framework present when you talk about enabling people or talk to people about you are able to manifest a new form. And it is something about allowing for creativity and something about patience, letting people's forms keep running out of them until something gets more solid.
Do you have music?
Yes, we have a lot of music. We have a great jukebox. We have musicians who play during dinner sometimes, and on Friday and Saturday nights, one room gets totally emptied of tables and chairs and people boogie like crazy. It's a great place to dance. I mean, it's cement floors. It is not very friendly, foot friendly, but bands love it to play there, and it's very wild because they don't make a lot of money, but they get a good audience, and so they like it. And in fact, a couple people who were on the Great Peace March who are here at Holden came through the Heartland 2 years ago on their march because we ran a benefit for them, and then because they had a good time that time, 2 weeks later when the whole march joined, we threw a party. And even though those are our roots, I had to go around and be telling these cute young things, this is a restaurant, put on shoes. You know, it's funny, that part of it is funny, the generational stuff that is happening now, where I hire somebody who looks sprawling, green hair, strange outfit, and I have to former same thing, my own version of back in 1968, have to figure out how to talk to this person the way my mother would like to about the way they look. And it's a great lesson for me.